Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 2nd, 2019. Preparation for the meeting between the Creator and creation. The last generation starts from the whole world transforming into a small village, into one system. By the 21st century, the world reached a state where everyone depends on everyone. This dependence is unpleasant, burdensome, and is perceived as manipulations of the financial elite over us, but nevertheless, the world has locked itself in one circle and therefore we are called the last generation. The world has started to operate as one global mechanism, and although this mechanism is corrupt, now we have the opportunity to correct it into a good one. After all, it has already revealed its evil and exposed its bad connections that have entangled us from all sides and acts to our detriment. The system is even getting out of the authorities' control. A financial blow-up on a global scale is brewing. After thousands of years of development, the system has finally reached global interdependence. Now a new problem has emerged. How can we correct ourselves? It is impossible to tolerate it any longer. Egoism is becoming so global that it leaves us no hope for the future. If we understand this, feel it, and seriously accept our mission, we must correct ourselves as soon as possible in the 10 in order to positively influence the world from this 10. Those who supposedly govern the world are very weak relative to us. They have no opportunity to influence anything other than the fictitious, artificial systems that they built for themselves, a financial system that has no real basis, an industrial system with 90% of its products that nobody needs, etc. If we give the world a small illumination from our corrections, it will make huge changes in it for the better. Therefore, we need to know what is happening in the world and include its state in our prayer. We cannot correct ourselves for our own well-being, it would be an egoistic action, and for the good of the Creator, we cannot be corrected as well because He does not need our favors. All correction should be done only in relation to the world. If we correct the world, we will create a vessel that the Creator can fill and take in joy. This vessel is the body of the common soul, and we are only the head that must organize this meeting between the Creator, the Light, and the Desire, the body of the Patsuf. We are in the middle, as a head, this is our mission. Therefore, we cannot but think about the world and absorb its problems. Holocaust Remembrance Day is more relevant today than ever. The situation has turned upside down. Today it is more dangerous for a Jew to live in America or Europe than in Israel. After all, he cannot defend himself there. The Jews abroad suffer and are endangered, while growing serenity reigns in Israel. These are the two forms of indifference characteristic for the Jews. Being among enemies, they do not feel at risk, and those who are far from danger, outside of the diaspora, are not just indifferent to what is happening there, but in general do not want to hear about it or support the Jews in exile. The same thing was happening before the Holocaust when none of the Jews around the world intervened in what was happening in Germany. The American Jews did not want to accept a ship with Jews who fled from Europe and sent them back to Germany, directly to Auschwitz. Nothing has changed since then, and today, the Israeli Jews will not worry about Jews in America. As once American Jews did not take care of European Jews, so Israelis will not worry about Jews in other countries of the world. They will say, if they feel bad there, let them come here. At least, we will not drive them out like the Americans did in the past. When the Nazis came to power in Germany, in the beginning they collaborated with the leaders of the Zionist movement, and all European Jews could have been safely sent to Israel. Germany was ready to contribute to this and promised financial support for those moving to Israel. But Jews did not want to leave Germany to exchange the most civilized country with the poor Palestine. Then, the attitude of the Nazis changed to the opposite. The moment the Jews refused to leave Europe and go to Israel, they turned from supporters into anti-Semites. This drastic change was made from above. Today we need to learn a lesson from history. But nowadays, the final correction of the whole world should take place, so the main thing is to take care of our unity and finding a way to escape from one place to another. It all depends on when, in what form, and how fast we will achieve unity. Depending on this, it may be that Jews will not have to look for a shelter in Israel as they flee from other countries. But there is no doubt that Israel will be the safest place if the people of Israel understand that they must be Yashar, El, straight to the Creator, that is, united. If not, then it may be the same here as all over the world, and even worse. Therefore, Holocaust Remembrance Day is a very relevant symbol for the present. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 30th of April 2019, lesson on the topic Building the Future Society. New Life Number 240. Happiness and Buddhism.
Hello, and thank you for being with us here on the New Life Educational Series with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Rav Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tom Mandelbaum. Hello. We want to, as usual, advance in our lives, reach new life, a better life, that we'll get up in the morning happy, that the people around us will be happy, and in general, that life will go from being some endless race of a survival and protecting ourselves from all kinds of blows that we're getting from all sides to something that's fun, something that we'll get up happily. And we'll be happy. How to do it? That's the question of all questions. It seems that throughout generations, people have been asking how to do it. But today, we really want to find an answer. We welcome you to be with us, searching for happiness. And today, we want to find it in the difference between East and West. Tell after you. So truly, we know Buddhism. And out of all the religions that we know, it's the thing that's most connected to happiness and the search for happiness. We know that Buddhism or the Buddha Torah, the purpose is stopping suffering. There's the Buddha that grew up in the castle, and when he went out, he saw human suffering and decided to dedicate his life to finding a solution to suffering. And that's what this whole religion is based on. Many people are attracted to it because it's very practical. It's not a matter of believing in something, but it teaches a practical daily way to bring you to happiness. And there's lots of courses and workshops and festivals around this issue. Many Israelis are attracted to it. And it's used for therapy, and it's taught in many universities. There's all the research of mindfulness, meaning attention, paying attention. Also in the educational system, it went into to help children that have problems paying attention in class to be happier and calmer. And if we speak a bit more about Buddhism and this method itself, according to Buddhist thought, happiness or pain is in our responsibility and it can be controlled. Buddhism is a method for controlling our undisciplinedness, meaning if we manage to control our consciousness, we'll be able to reduce pain and reach some inner. It doesn't matter what background you're from, anyone can practice it and reach happiness. So we want to talk today about elements of Buddhism and here, according to your approach, what's really correct. So what is there about Buddhism that identifies us so much with the search for happiness? Why are we so attracted precisely to this method? I would say that the method is very understood to each and every person. That if I have inner peace, I feel good, and then I control myself, I control my life, I feel that time is on my side. It's like taking something that calms me down. It's easy to use. It comes with all kinds of exercises for the body, sport, I would say. Yoga, breathing, massages. music, a certain way of sitting. It's a whole varied way of influencing a person to bring him to some inner peace, inner quietness. So I wouldn't even say that it's a religion. It's a way of calming people down that's built on a person's ego. But altogether wants to find the way to reduce suffering and no more. And according to that, they develop throughout time these things. It's this values, these inner perspective techniques that are very internal and that it's impossible to understand unless you get into them. There's many techniques like this in the world because a person doesn't understand what he's talking about unless he tastes it. And then, to the extent that he tastes it, he also adjusts himself to it. And therefore, they're talking about the years of practicing and also what's good about it is that it's open to everyone. And there's already lots of places where you can come and integrate with them and be there in this modest, quiet life because everything's out in the open. They don't see a way to deal with humanity or their society. They don't see that it brings people together. It's a very individualistic inner method where a person looks at himself inside. He doesn't connect with others. He can sit alone and disconnect from the whole world. And he can get into his peace and quiet and gets into this calmness and pleasure. And he's flowing on this inner flow. The society is divided into all kinds of levels. And it's a personal, individual solution. And it suits a person in our time because in some tower in Manhattan or in some other city, and you can do the exercises there and the meditations. And this is how you attain some quiet in life. There's no solutions. And the more that you live, you attain this quiet. And a person, they don't have a person has questions beyond life, and this is what he receives. The technique is just to calm a person in life. They want to add to it all kinds of additional things. Also elements from the next world. We're talking about a desire to reach enlightenment, that he's gotten rid of his illusions and he's in unity with nature. So here the question is he reaching it or not? Is it an inner illusion, his own inner illusion, or is it really correct? So we're not getting into all this research, this inner research. Of course, it's the opposite from the method of Abraham that's based on connection between people, on annulment of the ego. And here it's inner ascent of a person above himself, above the ego of himself. But it's not above the ego because he's continuing to be the same egoist towards other people. He's not correcting his attitude towards society. And therefore, this method suits everyone. A person doesn't need, apart from the exercise, he doesn't need to do anything. It doesn't demand anything from a person. I was in North Carolina, in a huge place, 30 by 30 kilometers, like in the mountains, a big place. There were huge groups there of sitting there meditating together in these huge halls, like a sports gyms. They have breakfast and meditation, lunch and meditation, and this is how it goes on all day long. They talk quietly between them. They almost don't speak at all. They walk around like ghosts. We lived with them for a few days. It really was some kind of a different civilization. They were locked into themselves, and this is the only way they could act. I'm sure it had influences, like they saw in a laboratory. They checked, they saw that it limited their gamma activity in their brain and also connected to feelings of happiness. They saw that meditation changes your brain. There's really physiological changes. Of course, if we're connected to turning it to a certain direction and a certain frequency, then of course it arranges itself. And of course, lets out hormones and waves. And this is how we feel in accordance with that. We feel if we're happier. But it doesn't mean I can't get it from all kinds of other things. The question is like this. When we reach such phenomena, do we help ourselves suffer less and be happier at the same in the same period that we're living and that's it? Or do we attain something above our lives and get into eternal life above nature in which we're in now? This is the question. One thing. The second thing, are we connecting to the upper force that has a plan, a beginning, an end, the thought of creation, the purpose of creation, and in accordance with that, we're also integrating in that same purpose what's actually been written for us? Or is it simply a psychological exercise that we're going through to make our lives easier? According to our world today, how everyone receives it, it's a kind of technique, and that's it. How to be calmer and take this life in a more convenient way. I'm not disregarding it, but it's very far from rising above our nature. To transform our ego, they're not transforming their ego. They're doing more and more things to not feel their ego, to lower a person to the level of living and vegetative and even still. The fact is that they are living, that they're less excited than everything that's around them, meaning their ego is like minimized. They breathe less, they do less things. They try to get rid of all the things disturbing them except to feel themselves inside. And in this they neutralize the ego that we think, in the wisdom of Kabbalah, that the ego developing us is that same motor that we need to use, that we need to use it in a special way and not destroy it and not minimize it in some way. That I don't get sedatives, I don't get drugs, I don't do meditation to not feel it, but rather I precisely need to get it out, and over that I need to grow more and more. That the ego beneath me will be mountain going up, 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 and I'm at the top of that mountain going up. I want to give something from my past. First of all, there's all types of meditation. There's mantras and there's types of meditation that a person can sit for a long time and focus on a tree or flower, and in that he blocks himself from reality and feels himself rising up. That's not called limiting yourself. That's completely limiting yourself. That's one type of meditation. But apart from that, there's the technique of attention and concentration. I did a 10-day course. All day we sat or we walked. And the point is to increase your attention abilities through the senses, meaning through sight, hearing, the feelings that come up in the body, and the information that is accepted through the senses, the experience. And through this perspective, let's say a thought comes while I'm in meditation, and I had to just look at it and let it go. And the idea is to strengthen some muscle of looking at in a non-judgmental way in reality. You do it in meditation, but you're also supposed to use that on a daily basis, that I experience my everyday life, but I have an ability to look at what's happening in a non-judgmental way. I have an understanding that things come and go and not to get too excited about it. But again, you're learning how it's more correct to deal with your body. I go through all kinds of emotional things, and I didn't know how to filter things. And they use that in sport, of course. These are good things that can serve a person, benefit a person on a daily basis. But it's not religion. It's not religion because it doesn't bring me to a level of development. Who's the upper force here? I don't know. They don't talk about it at all. Meaning the person with what he has in him, how does he need to be organized inside to be happy? Yes, not to suffer, just like Buddha wanted. Not to suffer, but it's also to clean your illusions. We're not talking about what this is. They give us exercises to discover what you want, and it takes a lot of time until a person reaches these insights. And the thing is to see the nature of reality, to open your senses, to go beyond the limits of your senses. There's supposed to be some enlightenment at the end. I didn't continue, but there's supposed to be some result like that. For whoever's searching, it's very difficult. It's not simple. There's some popularization, of course. This whole approach is very original toward the West. They've distorted it and made it into something instant for Europeans and Americans to be able to use it. They use it with kids in the It's a technique to help kids be more attentive and concentrate. It's supposed to increase their abilities, their behavior with their fellow men. If I'm concentrating and not reacting in an automatic way, I can be more compassionate. There's advantages in the connection between us. There may be a technique that can benefit us as a society. The technique is not social from the beginning. It was given to each and every person to calm us down so we'll accept our lives in a more convenient manner. It doesn't increase the way a person relates to life. The phenomena exist, but it's not directed toward that. It doesn't improve society, like I said already, and doesn't give a person the tools to advance and succeed in all kinds of acts that the modern world is developing in. It's only in the small rooms at home that a person will do exercises and calm down. If we're talking in a simple and practical manner, but still in that same society, that's called a Buddhistic society, apart from those in their monasteries up in the mountains, I don't see anything special about it. I don't see that they have any special achievements, at least in something. It's a very dispersed group with lots of differences between people, with a total lack of relating to one another. I don't see that it gives a person, that it allows a person to get away from suffering. You need very, very strong self-discipline to get into it. Maybe it doesn't suit everyone. I want to ask, but you said there's groups that do meditation. I know that there's groups that do meditation for the sake of peace, for love, that they direct all their thoughts for the good of the world, for the good of humanity. Isn't that something that has some impact, that many people together are directing their attention toward for the good of humanity? Does it influence anything? Sometimes they do it and they want to check if the violence was reduced in the area where they did it. I didn't check the results. If there were results like that, then we would see them. We would have heard about it, of course. The issue is that no. Here we get stuck with the opposite of the process that we need to go through from nature. We need to go through a process that's called recognition of evil, that our ego is bad. And even if we're connecting together and we're thinking good about something or someone, we're still doing it in an egoistic manner. We're using that same ego in a direct manner, that we want to profit in an egoistic manner. We want peace, health, all these inclinations, no matter how good and pretty they look, they're still against the purpose of creation. Therefore, we won't see anything good from them. I didn't get it. The more that we will want to do good in the world, in a simple, in this most simplest human manner, start giving out money in the world, food to the poor, a good education for kids, help to the needy and single parents, etc. In that you won't achieve more than a greater crisis. Why? Let's say that the entire world today will want to do good things. Everyone. You know that we're before the First World War now. We're sure that everything's going to be completely destroyed. We're going to lose everything. We can already see it. It's not a problem. Or that there's a big financial problem in America, and then the whole world collapses, and then nothing works. You have nothing to buy and nothing to buy with. And today in the big city, that's it. You're out of free. You have no choices. you're helpless. Let's say before such a risk, you're willing to get into anything. Come, let's hand out all the happiness between everyone. Let's do good things for everyone. Let's be like one gang. Do love in the world. A day of love, not just today, but any time. And surely from the whole heart, people that want to do it. By that, you will invite hatred, wars, murders, even greater than we have now. Why? Because it's not in accordance with the plan. That's the problem. And therefore, we see that many things that we do are done in a nice way, apparently, with good intentions, and it all ends with destruction. And it's clear to us. And all these facts are before us. Why? We need, first of all, to check, are we in our acts as people dependent of their lives, they who are acting according to all this plan that's being carried out in us? If it's going along with the plan, we'll succeed. If it's not succeeding, even if it's going against our, then we won't succeed, and even the opposite, we'll discover how much we're doing opposite acts, and we'll discover in them bad and destruction, and we'll apparently need to go back and start all these things from scratch. Therefore, we won't see out of all these things that Buddhism does, we won't see development. It's good for calming people down here in their small groups, and that's it. Or it's good for tourists that come to Hollywood. They get the few dollars that people leave, and then they get those people dollars. Then they send their messages to all four corners of the earth to disseminate the issue. People will wake up and come there. That's what happens altogether. To places where it's like places where people hang out. There's Israelis that go there. I don't see any future there, and I don't see it as religion, but rather no more than religion to calm down. Another thing that we can learn from Buddhism is our attitude toward reality, that our happiness, let's say who I'm thinking about, what a person thinks, and this is something that we do receive from Buddhism, and that I can use, with the help of some technique, I can change my attitude to reality and be happy. Psychology also took this. Cognitive psychology is built in this manner as well. So is that a correct technique that my happiness is dependent on me? No. And that's why psychology can't do anything with a person. These techniques are good for a certain time until a person develops and reaches a situation where he truly has problems about the increased ego that he has to start fixing. You said happiness is not in our grasp. We're talking about the special system as a principle, as a special influence. Yes, on condition. The condition is that he knows how to use what has been given him in order to reach the genuine happiness. Not that everyone defines for himself what it means to be happy. He can either think, I want to be like a Mexican woman under the tree with a barless tequila. Excuse me, I'm saying it. We can say the same for any person, an English person or a Russian. Whether it's football, doesn't matter. It depends what happiness is for a person. And you raise yourself up above nature because your ego is always demanding new things, and even if you're satisfied each and every moment, you have to do it over and over again, meaning you're in a run, in competition, attaining happiness or not attaining it. So it turns out that so together you not destroying it like Buddhism. Rather, you're rising above it and using it in the correct manner, that your ego begins. It's starting to rise in the perfect way. And you're using it to rise above others. And it's rising all the time and more and more and more. And this way you can enjoy by filling others. And then the filling you. Isn't this a pizza? It's not missing. It's like lighting a candle and there's nothing missing. And therefore, let's define first of all that happiness is a filling of the filling on a regular basis. It's like a little candy and the rest I know how to close my eyes to. That's called escaping reality. It's against the development of my nature that's always enlarging, enlarging, enlarging my ego. In other words, to go along with nature in the manner that I use all of my ego and I come out and that I complete myself, that the whole world is worth it for me. And Buddhism doesn't answer that. This is a system that this system of calmness, personal calmness, that's all it is, personal. That's built on using the ego as little as possible. To breathe less, to think less. Do less movements, everything is less. That a person feels that he's not alive and not dead. It all depends on the... In this exercise, I remember that the goal was... And the goal is to look from the side at everything, whether it's happiness or suffering, not to identify with everything. Just to look, look, look. I remember that we spoke, but there's a point like this in every person. Looking. And if you have importance... The question is, if I exercise this viewing from the side, am I deleting my ego? Am I not using it correctly? Or is it some important ability? There is another type of viewing that is viewing in my relation to the plan of creation. That this viewing is always has to be ahead of me in my sights, and I'm always checking myself and always advancing. That's looking that builds. because I am happy that each time my ego is being revealed and that I have this ego. I'm not running away from them. I use them in a correct manner. I understand that everything comes from that same force in nature, in Milvada. There's none beside him. He sends me disturbances or discrepancies showing me, so that I see inside me or around me, and so all the inner disturbances, I see the entire world as a reflection of myself. If I arrange myself truly in the correct manner, that my egoist things are corrected, then I'll see a perfect world, the heaven, the spiritual reality, the upper force filling all of humanity, and I'm in adhesion with him. That's what we need to reach. But it only depends on my inner correction toward all of humanity, that I see it as external. And truly, it's all my internal reality. And that's why we're always looking at ourselves, but we're living from a different, but it's based on something else. That the ego is constantly developing, that's allowing the British, that it allows me to rise above it each time, that's the Emunah Me'adat. And this is how I reach influence. Right up all through all the mitzvahs until love thy neighbor as thyself.
If we're talking about
the wisdom of Kabbalah, my approach to the world is not to isolate myself and close myself off from the world, and that everyone else can go to hell, but rather the opposite. I go out for myself. I forget myself. Don't feel myself. But I only feel myself and I do it to the extent that I can help him rise up to. And this is the purpose of creation. And the more that I advance the world in that, the more I advance myself. We see that these techniques are opposite. We go along with two forces in nature, the ego and the force. And that same upper force that's managing our ego, and in that ego we see ourselves and the world. So we need to see all these forms of development as desirable and worthy of our advancement, and not to say that something's missing in the world or there's things that are going against it, but precisely the opposite. Everything was created to attain the purpose of creation. You're always mentioning, let's say when we're talking about looking, you're saying it needs to be looking at the sites. On the sites you put the plan of development of creation, and that's how you measure it. And also now you said it has to be toward the purpose of creation. Actually, this whole conversation you say, is it advancing us toward the plan of creation? What is the plan of creation? The plan of creation is that all of reality will go back to one form. That there'll be one desire, inanimate, vegetative, animate speaking, and that these forms, that they're in the that they're in our desire, and these desires are in matching and equivalence of form with the upper force that is called the light. Can you translate that? to human language, what's the purpose of creation that I have to look toward at every moment? Yes. The purpose of creation, if we're talking about a person and humanity, that all of humanity will become as one man with one heart through love thy neighbor as thyself. Truly as yourself, not pretty words, but rather in the full essence of the word. That's the goal. That's the target. It always has to be in front of me. And against that, I have to look at what's happening at any given moment. I have to cut my life into frames in which I look what's happening with me, my relations with people around me, doesn't matter where, from that place. And what am I looking to see? This is the ruler. What am I doing? Can you explain to me what I'm doing? I understand what the ruler is, the compass, or whatever you want to call it. The final purpose is that we'll reach one man as one heart. I get it. But what's the technique to actually use that to look at each point in my life? What we said in the previous show. The group of Abraham. Let's talk in a clear manner. That he needs to find a society. He needs to find a society that's carrying this out, of this carrying out this act of connecting. His goal is to reach the love of friends, love of brothers, a mutual guarantee. And then according to their effort to reach it, even though they'll have all kinds of conflicts and arguments between them and problems that have awakened especially, that will give enough power to connect. The moment they have 100 tons of ego and it's distancing them and they made an effort to be together, then these 100 tons of ego that was the bad force and helped them do 101 tons of good force. This builds a vessel with a desire, with a screen. It makes a condition for the upper light to be revealed, the upper force, the creator. Or whatever you want to call it. According to that 100 tons in their ego. We see how much our egoistic development helps us each time to reach more and more to be like the upper force, because he is managing the ego. Let's say this inside, that we'll all reach to be one man is one heart. Let's say it penetrates a huge audience of people in some country or some city, some region in the world. Everyone gets it. They carry out, each of them, each individual there carries out at every moment. They look at what's happening in their life toward that goal, this purpose, this connected image. What is he checking? Let's say you live in a society like that, or I do, or tell us that everyone around us has that image in their heads. You're living, you have work, you have stuff, you have interactions, you have all kinds of things. How do you carry out this act or against this goal that you're aspiring toward? I want to understand it, what we have to do in each frame of our lives. You emphasized the whole conversation. You said if it's going along with the purpose of creation, it's going in a good direction. If not, it's not. But I understood the whole conversation. I want to know how to implement it at each point in my life. We're sitting in a studio. Something's happening. There's people around you. Apart from living what's happening now, you also have a point that you have to look at the point of creation. What? I'm always checking myself. Is my attitude to the world that everyone will be connected in the correct way, equal, relatively equal? That I, in my attitude to life, I want to reveal the attribute of bestowal that fills everything. That's called revelation of God to the creatures in this world.
I understand that everyone will be connected in a
It's a matter of doing it in an equal manner, and what is the revelation of the upper force in all of reality? The way I look at it, when I look at this world is managed by an upper force that manages all the details. It pushes us from place to place. That at each and every moment I'll see the world filled with this power. This is called Israel, Kadosh Baruch Hu, the light, the group. And that's what I want to reach. How do I reach it? In my inclinations, in my efforts to live like that all the time. Why is it important for me to pay attention to everything? You can also call it meditation, by the way. It's also called people who hear the wisdom of Kabbalah, they think that's a meditation. This is Baal Shem Tov developed this, and especially Chassidut, that's what people say. We don't call it meditation, but rather it's intention. Concentration in our desire and our mind, and also in external acts. I organize myself with my society, with a group, so that I can always be connected with that society that helps me relate to life in this way. What's the importance of each moment in each moment? To be in adhesion with the acts of the upper force. I want to be on the same wave at all times with the Creator. I don't want to be in an opposite wave. I don't want to be in a different frequency. But really to go along with it. We're doing exercises, yes? So through that, we come to a grasp of the method, the plan, and we start going along with it. And the more that I'm going along with it in the same movements, I'm arranging myself according to these acts. And so it turns out that I'm along with it in mutuality. And it's called Achor and Kedem Tzarchani, that I see that in my desire to receive, and also the light that's in it, lighting and correcting the desire. It's all going according to one plan, and I'm in adhesion with the plan, and I'm truly in it. And this whole life gets a different perspective. I'm not looking at the cases around me, but rather I'm in a plan. That this plan is being implemented. They're running there and they're running there. But I see it's the implementation of the plan, like in a theater, that each and every puppet, there's a hand turning them all around. And I, in this whole system, will discover who's managing it. That I'll understand his rationale, his plan, and in that I'm growing as a person who's similar to the upper force. That's why it's called a person similar to him. This is something, Buddhism, you do it yourself, you calm yourself down. Here I'm not calming myself down. There it's calming people down. But it's here it's attaining the upper force. What does it have to do with happiness? Precisely in that. And that I precisely feel myself at the degree of the upper force, above the ego, which is actually bringing me all the trouble. And since I'm integrated in that upper force, it's an upper force for in every way. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not even being measured toward others as something more or less, even though we call it the upper one. But actually, by being similar to him, I rise to a degree where there we're not talking at all about pain and escaping pain, about good and bad, but rather we're rising above all those perceptions. And we're in perfection that's not based on our lackings, on the lack of perfection. This is actually the true happiness. In this inner happiness, do I have to learn to control my thoughts? Is it possible? Because Buddhism, it says it's the way to control your consciousness, not to deal with the past, the future. All the techniques do the same thing. They tell a person how he has to control himself. And here it's the opposite. A person doesn't control himself, but rather he allows the upper force. Where's the upper force? You keep saying, I want to reveal the upper force. That's the thing I'm measuring myself towards. I don't want to control myself. I want the upper force. But where is this upper force? What is this? Religious? No, it's not religious. Some people believe in the upper force and some people don't. So what do I do with this? It has nothing to do with faith. So what is it? How do I look at my life from a desire to discover the upper force? I'm a person standing and looking at the world and myself. You can imagine this situation, myself and the world, yes. I see everything moving in some direction. Everything's rolling. This universe is working according to some laws that I don't understand, that maybe we're starting to understand or discover all kinds of little things. And the planet, it's just a little body at the edge of the universe. The planet is also big for me, and there's also forms of life. People are advancing according to the laws. We discover that there's all laws. It's not just random that this world exists, because there's all kinds of constants. I don't know how to say it in Hebrew. All kinds of small data. That there's a connection between the phenomena, that there's a reason why this world exists and that this planet exists, the sun, the moon. There's terms like this and like that, and this life is a very sensitive thing. If there was something more or less, then life wouldn't exist. And things develop according to some forms, and everything that I see, and the more that I study, I'm learning that it's all some special plan, some special force that's operating everything. Physics are speaking about it. They're developing atoms and quantum. In those days, they gave you the particle, the godly particle, they called it. They gave you the Nobel Prize, etc. They're discovering that there's something universal. And the universal law and the universal power, that's what I call God. And in geometry, it's nature. In numerology, I discover the force of nature, but the foundation that operates everything, like that same boson X or kvakim, they're particles, tiny, tiny, tiny particles that make up all the elementary parts. What's the connection between these particles and everything happening at every moment in my life that I have to look from the point of the creation? Don't look at yourself in such a manner like a little kid. You're integrated. You're made up of electronics and molecules and etc., etc. That's you, and your brain works like that, and in all these things, below them, there's a force operating. And it operates everything according to its laws, system of laws. And we discover all kinds of small phenomena that we can discover from this force, how it operates all of reality. And we start to discover how much this force that's operating all the parts of reality is one, because we discover that there's a connection between all the parts of reality, inanimate, animate, vegetative, throughout the whole planet. I'm not even talking about the whole cosmology. So it works out, so whether you want to or not, I'm talking about physicists, people who are researching material, not some Shimon from the Shuk. Talking about research, we're discovering there's a force that operates everything. And our problem today is that we've reached a situation where we have a necessity of existence to attain this power, to attain its plan, what it wants from us. That's what I need to ask myself at any moment. That's what's called looking at my life from the... I don't need the universe or anything. I want to know how to suffer less. That's what we're talking about, happiness, right? So now let's conclude it. I see in all my plans and all my attitudes, what I do is worthless. I go there, I get a blow. I go there, I get a blow. I get it from all sides. So what can you do? So I'm gradually in this manner learning that there is a program. I'm learning it in a negative way. I don't want to learn it in a negative way. I want to discover it. You do this, you get blows. At the end of the day, what do I need to do? I need to understand what it wants from me, because I want to be happy. How will I reveal this general plan? How? This program. This is what Abraham discovered through with the Torah. You can say, how will I know? Where's the research that I will be able to believe it or not, but and to know that it's correct? Yes? That's not the question. The question is, how do I do it? How do I discover this? This program says that all of nature has to come, has to reach one form, like the one form operating it, the one force. In other words, harmony to mutuality. Like in an orchestra, you have lots of... but everyone's playing the same thing according to the flow. You have lots of instruments, sorry. Everything has to be organized. And that's what you have to discover, the symphony, and see how you flow along with it. So how do I discover it? That's what we have the method for, this simple method. You need to discover how to connect, to know the technique. Like in yoga, you need to know how to connect. How we connect, we learn it. We learn it from the group. We connect together, and we look how to be connected. And from us connecting ourselves, we find there inside the group, if we overcome the ego and everything, we find the general force. But in the meantime, we see that it's operating as this small group, where we can reach one circle, equality, we're 10, we can reach as one, and it's lighting us, this force, according to equality of form. We don't need to ask for it. that we're starting to be as one because he's one. We feel him. It's like a detector. We feel him. And then we acquire the attribute of mutual responsibility, connection, and we can go onward with that to develop in the whole world. And then I say to everyone, to the entire world, friends, let's make circles. Let's not advance in blows, but in good. What do you mean let's make circles? I mean connections between us, more and more and more. And then afterwards, we'll start to connect this group with that group. And then we'll reach this one big unity, and then we'll all rise up to the level of happiness, the true level of happiness. Our time is up, unfortunately. So if I want to know that I'm looking at everything happening in my life correctly, through the group, if I'm looking at it through the group at the whole world, no, I want something more universal. How does a person in his life, how can he know that he's looking correctly at everything in his life? Through the correct connection with people. What is the correct connection? Through our vote. The correct integration, equal, good, with everyone. But with, if it's hard for us, through the group that's around him. Thank you, Rav Lightman. Thank you, Tal. We'll look, we'll be as one, new life. All the best, so long.